Well, leading off today's show, we've got the Old Moles' Bill Resnick. He has Dave Finkel on the phone to give us some historical perspective on Israeli efforts to subdue the Palestinians in Gaza. Bill.
Thanks, Clayton. David Finkel, welcome to KABU.
Good morning.
David Finkel edits the journal six times a year, Against the Current. He writes a lot on the Middle East and Palestine-Israel. He's a member of Jewish Voice for Peace in Detroit, Jewish Voice for Peace here in Portland. We have a chapter of which I'm a member. Dave Finkel, tell us about Gaza, this latest murderous episode in the Israelis' effort to demoralize and destroy the Palestinian movement and nations. What's happening now?
Well, I think it may be a turning point. I mean, we'll have to see. But I know probably many of your readers get the Portside subscription service online. And if you do, have a look at the piece just posted from Amira Haas. It's from the Israeli paper Haaretz. And it really talks about how this movement in Gaza got started. It was not initiated by the organized political forces there, although Hamas has kind of taken it under its wing. The idea is between Land Day, which is March 30th, commemorating a day in 1976 when six Israeli citizens of Israel were killed protesting land confiscations, that's inside Israel, from March 30th up until May 15th, which is marked by Palestinians as the day of al-Nakba, the catastrophe, which is how they view the formation of the State of Israel, that there would be marches and protests at the Gaza border. Gaza is inhabited primarily by refugees and their descendants who were forced out in 1948. On the first day, this past week, right before Passover, the Israeli army responded with live fire as well as rubber bullets, and at least 16 people were killed. Interestingly, the Israeli army tweeted a boast that they knew exactly where all the bullets had gone. B'Tselem, the Israeli human rights organization, retweeted this, saying this establishes that the Israeli army has committed war crimes because they knew where the bullets went, and so they knew very well that they had targeted and killed innocent people, non-combatants. Then the Israeli military, IDF, took down that tweet. But it's gone viral, of course. Now, I really would urge people who are interested to get a new book called Gaza, An Inquest into Its Martyrdom, by Norman Finkelstein. And if you want to see a brief sort of informal review of the book, I posted it on Solidarity's website, www.solidarity-us.org. It's an incredibly important book, and it really goes through not only what's been done to Gaza, but how the distortions by government, by media, and even by some human rights organizations about what's been going on there.
A little bit on the book. Norman points out that even though the UN body investigating it and an international body, other international bodies, and Amnesty International investigated previous Israeli attacks on Gaza, which left millions of tons of rubble and killed maybe 1,000 or more children, and many other children die for lack of medical care, and hunger is endemic in kids all over the Gaza Strip and the adults. Even though these reports pointed out that gets into the hands of the lawyers, it's like police killings in the United States in some ways. They find a justification. And what Norman does is skewer those justifications very, very convincingly.
Yes, and what has always characterized Norman Finkelstein's work is meticulous attention to detail. So I think that people who are interested in Gaza, it's a very tough read, but I think everyone should get it. It's called Gaza, An Inquest into Its Martyrdom. It's published by University of California Press.
Dave Finkel, what was interesting about this march, what was so notable about this march, is that it was completely nonviolent, and the marchers were shot, whatever it was, 18 killed, and somewhere between 300 and 2,000, I've heard conflicting reports. They are completely nonviolent. It seems to me the Israelis are now desperate to not just to stop the few violent attacks that occur, they're very afraid of a kind of Gandhian movement gaining momentum and gaining the momentum so that the boycott divestments, as boycott sanctions the divestment movement, gains strength. And what they've done, though, is they claim there were people shooting at them, and they also have this technique of agent provocateurs who do something, some minor violent attack, which then justifies their overwhelming attacks on people who weren't part of the march, and especially in Gaza, the air attacks to destroy Gaza.
Right. The thing is, actually, the potential of a mass Gandhian-type movement of nonviolent defiance is something that Norman does point to in the book, and he's pointed to it elsewhere. But the thing to understand is that Israel, the Israeli state, really has no problem dealing with any kind of violence because they have overwhelming firepower. So in the face of nonviolent defiance, as has been seen by a number of villages protesting the apartheid annexation wall that Israel has put up inside the West Bank, what the Israeli state needs to do is they need to make sure that there's violence. They need to make sure that violence, if it doesn't happen, that it's provoked, so that if it becomes a violent uprising, they can deal with that. And if a tiny number of Israeli citizens are wounded or killed, that's then a convenient pretext for the bombing and killing of hundreds or thousands of Palestinian civilians. So, I mean, I know that sounds cynical, but that's just the way it is.
This is KBOO Radio in Portland, Oregon, talking about the way it is. We'll get to the possibilities of the way it could be by the end of the interview, but that surely is the way it is. Dave, let's talk a little bit about conditions in Gaza. The killing is not only military stopping any kind of resistance, particularly the nonviolent resistance. They're also doing a lot of slow killing, the methodical starvation in so many ways, making life terrible in so many ways. Tell us about Gaza, which the UN recently called as becoming uninhabitable because of the way the Soviet, the Israelis are starving it.
Well, you have to look basically at three parties that are responsible for this. There's Israel, there's Egypt, which pretty much blockades Gaza from its side, and there's the United States government, which approves of the blockade and which pours military aid into both Israel and Egypt. So we have to really look at our own government. But Gaza is, as the United Nations has said, is rapidly becoming uninhabitable from the standpoint of the impossibility of economic life, from the standpoint of clean water, the water infrastructure, and a lot of the basic public service infrastructure, which is destroyed in Israeli military raids, can't be properly fixed because the equipment needed to repair it is labeled by the Israelis as dual use. In other words, it might have some conceivable military purpose, and so that's blocked, so that basically the population is being slowly sickened and starved, deprived of clean water. Fishermen can't go out and fish, increasingly not only because they run the risk of being shot by the Israeli military, but also because of the water is just filthy. So it's a horrendous situation, and it's really very, very, very much undercovered by the media, partly to avoid putting the finger of blame at Israel and the United States, but also because the dwindling amount of space on corporate media available for that kind of coverage is being drowned out by other catastrophes in Syria, in Yemen, in Burma, all these other places. So the situation is incredibly desperate and very, very poorly covered.
This is Cable Radio, Portland, Oregon. Bill Resnick for the Old Mole Variety Hour, talking to Dave Finkel, the editor of Against the Current Journal, six times a year, coming out of Detroit. and writes a good deal on the Middle East and Palestine, Israel, keeps track. Dave, the Israelis are active on many other fronts trying to protect their colonial state and make for a greater expansion, of course, the West Bank being their big target, trying to take it over completely. They've apparently decided that Iran now, on an international stage, is their great enemy. And Netanyahu has been promoting an attack on Iran for many, many years now. Tell us about that. It seems to me that it's enormously dangerous. Just tell us about what's happening in Iran and the way Israelis are playing it and why.
Well, essentially, especially under the auspices of the Trump administration, Israel is working on forming regional alliances with the most reactionary fundamentalist regimes in the Sunni Arab world, notably Saudi Arabia, also, you know, the United Arab Emirates and so forth. So this collaboration, this military collaboration, which was at least semi-secret before, is now out in the open. Saudi Arabia sees Iran as its deadliest rival for influence in the Middle East in both geopolitical and religious terms. And so Israel is part of that alliance. And see, under the Obama administration, the U.S. administration had made it very clear that Israel would absolutely not be tolerated to launch a unilateral military action against Iran. With Trump in office, the Netanyahu government, Netanyahu himself, the Israeli prime minister, is under tremendous legal pressure because he's being investigated and recommended for prosecution in no fewer than three or four separate and distinct corruption allegations. Huge scandal. So there is that risk. Now, it's also because of Iran's expanded influence in Syria and
Lebanon.
And Lebanon, yeah. So the danger is an Israeli attack on Iran is what I would call a low probability but disastrous, if it occurs, event. Now, I don't believe that either Israeli or American generals are the least bit anxious to take Iran on in a military confrontation because they know that it's not a war game.
Yeah, it might, though, be a good distraction for Trump and Netanyahu, both of whom are in deep trouble. Dave, early on in the interview, you pointed out that you saw this latest episode in the destruction of Gaza and the terrifying of the people, demoralization, as well as maintaining it as a concentration camp. There might be a turning point. It does seem to me there's some sort of bits of hope in the situation now. Tell us about it.
Well, when you say bits of hope, yeah, bits. I think as if people will look up the Amira Haas article, and you can get it if you're on Portside, as I said, she makes a very important point that the people of Gaza are not just victims, that they're not just passive victims, that they have the capability to be an active and organized force. That's one thing. Another thing, which we haven't touched on yet, I just heard this morning, it appears that international pressure has forced Israel to back away from its stated plan to either expel en masse or incarcerate tens of thousands of African asylum seekers, mostly from Eritrea and Ethiopia, some from Sudan, who made their way to Israel and have been living kind of in the shadows for a number of years. International pressure has forced a change there. So I think it shows that international campaigns like BDS, Boycott, Divestment, Sanctions, which I encourage all your listeners to learn about if they don't know about it already, can make a difference. And when people, as they do in Gaza, begin to act, begin to carry out the program of massive defiance with nonviolent tactics, it's the responsibility of the whole world to respond. Because, as the example of the U.S. South and South Africa and other places shows, those tactics, nonviolent action, can be very effective, but only if the world is paying attention.
Dave Finkel, thanks a lot for talking to us today.
Thank you.
A blinding flash of white light lit up the sky over Gaza tonight. People running for cover, not knowing whether they're dead or alive. They came with their tanks and their planes, with ravaging fiery flames, and nothing remains. Just a voice rising up in the smoky haze. We will not go down in the night without a fight. You can burn up our mosques and our homes and our schools, but our spirit will never die.